You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
I'm Sean the Orange Course, a retro game fan from the U.S.
And I'm Kevin Vink Tambernino, an import gaming fan who took things one step further and moved to Japan. Together, we make Famicom Dojo, a podcast that explores the Japanese origins of today's video games and consoles.
And speculates about their future. Assuming they have one.
It's modern games with a retro twist.
This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast. This week is the last podcast of 2016 and the first week of 2017. Oh, this is heavy. We're talking all about value, both in the ephemeral sense and the monetary sense. Pile of Shame is filled with games we haven't valued enough, and Ving's Future Retro reminds us that you really should go to our website, FamicomDojo.tv, and play That Famicom Love Life by Lewis Lloyd Judson. Yes, we were born to play all this video games.
Hello, welcome to the Famicom Dojo podcast. I'm Vink, and joining me as always is Sean the Orange Orange.
I mean, we do an intro before the show starts, so it's kind of redundant, don't you think?
Yeah. I don't know. They might have forgotten since then.
Could be.
Well, welcome to the Famicom Dojo video game podcast. I'm Vink.
Hi, Vink.
All right. Hello. You must be that Sean Orange I've heard so much about.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm glad we finally got a chance to meet.
Indeed.
What?
So what are we talking about today?
I don't really have a topic, you know, like it's the end of the year. Like you know what? We probably should have done like an end of the year roundup. Or maybe we can do like a predictions podcast for next year too.
I think we still have time. We can do that. We can still do that. We've got a couple more before the new year hits. So, well, then I would just like to talk about something that I've been thinking about a lot when it comes to retro gaming.
Oh yeah.
And that is value.
Value, you say.
Value, I say. Yes. Like, what really is a game worth?
Oh dear.
I know. This is kind of our philosophical podcast this time, but okay.
If you like the podcast or videos and just want to help out, well, there's a way you can do that. Just sponsor an episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast by going to littlepodcast.com, finding the Famicom Dojo logo, and clicking on the sponsor button. We would like to thank you for your generous contribution, so leave us a message that we can read on the show about you, or just drop us a line on why you like the podcast and videos, and then share this podcast with all your friends and brag to them about how you paid us to be nice to you, or something.
So I was walking back from dropping my daughter off at school today, and there's like this abandoned house that has like since collapsed, and it's kind of funny because one of the few
hilarious
one of the few structures that remains is just like the toilet is just like the room that contained it has long since eroded away, but the toilet remains. It looks like the Big Bad Wolf like blew this house down and it just got kind of like left to the elements. I don't know. Okay. There's never been a house there for as long as I've lived here, so. But okay. There's just been, I'm guessing the house was abandoned like, I don't know, in the 40s or 50s or something, and it's just like nature has taken its course. But anyway, so it's basically an open field, but because it's an open field, people dump a lot of garbage there. I don't know why. They just
do. Japan?
Yup. We're talking the sticks here. Well, they're not throwing it on the street. They're throwing it near these remnants of where a house used to be. But listen, this is where the story gets good. Sometimes there's like some interesting stuff there because it's mostly just like food wrappers and beer cans, but occasionally there's something interesting, like an old CD or something. But like, you know, usually it's been raining on these things already, so you know, it's too late for anything. But I was looking and I'm like, that's a small little case right there. Oh my goodness, that's a GameCube case. And I reach in and I pull out, and it's on my Twitter if you want to see pictures, but I found Phantasy Star Online 3. Just in the garbage. Works fine. Works great. So to whoever threw that away, that game had zero value. It didn't even have enough value for them to, like, you know, donate it to like Japan's equivalent of a Goodwill or something. You know what I mean?
Couldn't walk to the hard office. Is it just farther away
than? Yeah. I don't know. The way it's thrown there, it looks like it was like flung out of a moving car's window or something. There was also a laptop's power adapter in there. I don't know why. But anyway. So yeah, just people junking stuff, and I was like, wow, you know, that game has some value. I mean, it's not worth a lot. It's not worth a lot. But, like, you know, it could have some value. And I told you this story before, obviously, before off pod, and you had said something like, well, because it's offline now, it doesn't really have any value. But I mean, it's still got a single player mode. And I don't know. It makes me sad to think of abandoned games like that. And more so, it makes me sad to think that probably in dumps all over the world right now, there's tons and tons of really, really good games that just were flung out when kids left home and the parents didn't know what to do with them or whatever. And then there's the other side of the coin, is that games have become, their value has exceeded what it should, I think. Like eBay prices and things like that. There's no reason why some of these games should be so, so very expensive when a lot of them are quite, quite common.
Such as?
Well, for example, the first Super Mario Brothers. I've seen listings on eBay that say, Super Mario Brothers, rare! And I'm like, how? How? In what universe is it rare? It is the most common cartridge ever produced. I mean, that might not be right. Perhaps some portable titles got produced more. Or Pokemon! Pokemon! I was in the States, and I couldn't believe that copies of Pokemon Red and Blue were going for like $40. Yellow was going for $50. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right? Those games are really, really common, and the batteries probably don't even work. Just...
Yeah, a lot of games have been going up in price for the NES. Like, I remember when you were here and you mentioned you wanted, like, Super Smash TV. I was like, oh, yeah. I'll go find that. And I did, and it was $30. And I'm like, what?
Exactly. It's not a rare title. And, I mean, I bought my first copy of that, you know, but when I was a college student. I mean, yeah, that was like, 15 years ago. But I think I paid, like, $5 for it, you know. And I get that there's limited numbers of these, but I really feel that, like, the prices hit, and I think, like, the collector's market has really done it, especially people who get their games, like, appraised. You know what I mean? Like, send it into to one of those companies that, like, determines the value of it. Because like, there's just been this escalation of value. Because if you see one person listing something on eBay for a huge amount of money, you start listing them for that price too. And eventually that becomes the price. You know? And that's unfortunate because I think it's keeping a lot of people away from our hobby.
Well, you know, because they can just buy an NES Classic. And
when I was younger... Now, we talked in a previous podcast about that, you know, I played a lot of Atari when I was a kid. But I didn't own my own Atari until after I owned an NES. And the reason I bought my Atari was because the system was $30 and the games were any game in the store, 99 cents. And some games like Combat or whatever were two for a buck. And so I amassed a library of about 100 Atari carts for about $100, you know.
Sure.
And I played them because they were cheap. But like a lot of those games right now, I couldn't even believe the prices some of them are going for. Like, I mean, we were at a place that I think had pretty good prices. the place you got your Atari.
Yep.
And but still, some of those games were like $10, you know.
Yeah. Some were the ones I was interested in, as it turned out.
Well, of course.
Few of them were like $2 or $3, though.
Exactly. But the value is based on a couple of things. Of course, rarity is one thing for value, but it's like some of the rarest Saturn games are worth almost nothing here in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can't just be rarity. It also has to be desirability. Mm-hmm. And how many copies are in the market. Okay, take a game like the PC Engine game, Rondo of Blood. It's a Castlevania game.
Yep.
Great game. But it is not rare. It is, in fact, not one of the more common, but I, at most, uncommon. I would give it maybe an uncommon, but like it's definitely not rare. But everybody likes that game, and people who like that game keep the game or sell it for a lot of money if they are getting rid of it. So the number of copies that are actually available is very small.
Sure.
Because people really, really like that game. So there's where its value came in. It's not a rare title. I have way rarer titles than that game. Tons. Probably most of my collection of PC Engine stuff is rare, but very few of them are worth nearly as much as that. So, I mean, you've got, you know, and that's why Mario keeps going up in price, too, because if you're starting retro gaming, like, okay, say that one of your sons was like 10 years old, and you're like, I want to prepare them a package for retro gaming. You're going to have Mario in there. You got to, you know. Mm-hmm. Or if someone decides they're going to get into retro gaming, that's got to be one of the first games they buy. And so, you know, there's a limited quantity of that game. Even though it's a very, very common game, people want it, and people aren't usually trading that one in. Unless they trade their whole collection in, you know. So the value keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this can be said for anything that has, like, limited, you know, limited runs and things like that. But I think, I don't know, I think we're pricing ourselves out of our hobby.
Yeah, like without things like the NES Classic and Famicom Mini, I don't know if I would spend $30 or more on some of these NES games that I don't have yet.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really bad about selling my original collection. I talk about this all the time. But like, because my collection's bigger now than it was back then. But it cost me a lot more to get it again the second time.
Yeah, I have a bunch of stuff on my wall here. I'm looking at it right now, and it's like I don't even know what a lot of it's worth. Like I've mentioned in previous podcasts that things like N64 games are getting really pricey.
Conker's Bad Fur Day
is like $90 unboxed. That's insane. I had no idea my cartridge was worth that much. I'm not going to let it go. I mean, why would I ever do that? But it's just like. You know, that it costs about as much new box when it came out. It doesn't make any sense. It can't be a rare game. I mean, apart from it being by the company.
I like that. It's probably not as common as a lot of the other games by Rare Software. I was going to say Rare Games right there. Because it was a later produced cartridge. But it's not a dang it, stupid company name. It's not a rare game by any means. it's just like the Virtual Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual Boy now? You're gonna pay $150-$200 for a Virtual Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I got mine, it was $30 at Toys R Us. They were trying to get rid of them.
Yep.
And I think near the end of that, they were selling them for like $10. And for a long time, they were worth absolutely nothing. You know, and
well, the problem with Virtual Boys in specific is finding a working one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those mirrors wear out. There's like a band or something. There's like the mechanism just wears out.
Well, plus people didn't take great care of them either. Yeah. You know?
Right, right. But just over time, like anything else, it's just, you know, that place I got my Atari games actually had a Virtual Boy, and I asked them how much it was. It's like, oh, that's just for parts. It doesn't actually work. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But like if you want to talk about value of some of these things too, like they had a 32X Sega CD copy of Night Trap, like Ooh. in box. And I was like, great, I'll buy it. It'll be $90. I'm like, nope. Not going to happen. I found an opened copy on eBay for like 48. Better, but still not really enough for me to jump on it, you know, because it's Night Trap.
Oh, man. It'd be a very cool video, though, because the difference between the Sega CD version and the Sega CD with 32X is night and day. it's like watching...
It's like a trap.
It's like, wow. It's like watching the difference between, like, a video CD, which is kind of what this... maybe not quite that high quality, as compared to, like, a real video stream.
Yeah.
Which is what the Sega CD one looked like, if real video had way less colors.
Yeah, the Sega CD version is a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah. Significantly. Although, if you get the first run edition, it's actually kind of expensive.
Oh, good grief. This is like a Stadium Events thing all over again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But actually, if you get the 3DO version of Night Trap,
yeah,
it's pretty similar to the Sega CD Plus.
I have to get a 3DO then, so it's about I might as well just buy.
You don't have a 3DO?
No, I don't have a 3DO.
How do you play? I was going to name a great 3DO game.
That should answer your question. I mean, oh, I see what you did.
There are some very good 3DO games.
There's like five Sega CD 32X games or so, and I'd like to get them all. But
you have one of them,
Scottie Pippen Slam City. It's kind of great. I have to admit, it's kind of great. But you know, $90 for Night Trap is just I don't think so. And like if I really wanted to buy all of them at this point, is it really going to cost me hundreds of dollars? It's just insane. Nobody really cares about these that much.
That's one. Like, okay. When you see Earthbound going for $200, you kind of understand that because it's a game that it didn't do well when it was produced. It got a pretty big print run, but it's not as common as some of the games. And people want to hold on to it because it's an endearing classic, you know. So I can kind of see why their prices are a little bit high. But Sega 32X version of Night Trap, the only thing it's got going for it is rarity.
Right.
Like, it's Night Trap. Not saying Night Trap is a horrible game. It's not horrible, but it's not, you know, it's not your top shelf, this is the game, you know. So I was at Hard Off the other day.
Mm.
There's no Hard Off in my town. We have a Book Off, which has games, but it's not quite the same.
Sure.
But I was at Hard Off, and Hard Off used to be a place you would go to get, like, disc system games for a dollar.
Sure.
You'd go, and they had, like, bundles of games for, like, this 20 games shrink-wrapped together for $5, you know.
Mm.
And it used to just be an absolute wonderland of amazing deals. I bought so many games there during my first round of collecting. Because it was just dirt cheap. Just crazy how cheap the stuff was. I picked up a ton of Sega Saturn games there for a dollar a game. But I went and it has caught up with the upward trend of value. I sent you a picture of that Mark III I found, right? Or the Mark One.
It's Mark II. I thought.
Oh, Mark II. You're right. Mark II. And that would never have been that expensive that, you know, a few years ago.
Sure.
People have just, I blame foreigners. We should build a wall. Anyway, around Japan.
I see.
And we'll make, the ocean pay for it. But like, it is what happened. Like, people have gotten into the retro collecting and import collecting, and people have just absolutely cleaned these stores out.
Yeah.
apparently Super Potato is pretty much has very little of value left. Because tourists have come. I haven't been there in a number of years, but it was already getting a little sparse the last time we went. Did we go to Super Potato that last trip? Maybe it was the last TGS I went to.
No, we didn't. We didn't go in 2011.
No, you're right. You're right.
Like it had moved or something. I don't remember exactly. Like, I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Regardless. Yeah. It was a bit anticlimactic, but when I went the first time, back in 2001, it was amazing. I mean, still, I thought there were better shops than Super Potato even then, but still, the quantity that they had was just phenomenal, and you know, they're just, I mean, people have just been cleaning out anything of value. And you're, and the same thing's happening in the States, I'm guessing. Remember that the store we went to had one Saturn game, and it was a baseball title.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Saturn games in general anywhere for a long time.
I suppose. But, you know, it didn't... The thing is, you're not going to see many things at stores anymore because they're just all going straight to eBay, you know.
Right.
And that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate.
Because, well, I don't know. I found my copy of that Smurfs game on eBay. Apparently, there's like some kind of like a voice, like educational one that's really expensive that I don't really care about. But the one I wanted, I got for like, I don't know, less than $10, I think.
Well, that's not bad. That's really not bad. Although I'll point out that was one of the games I got for 99 cents back in the day. But yeah.
Right, yeah. It's a bit more pricey than it used to be. That's true.
But I guess that's the thing. So, what really got me, I mean, between finding that game out of the garbage and the other thing that got me thinking about this was I was reading a thread on NeoGAF, which I read way more than I should be. And someone was going, will the Wii U be collectible in the future? And I'm like, yes. I mean, say what you want about the Wii U. I mean, say what you want about it, but like, if something exists, there will be someone who collects it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think the Wii U, and I've been saying it from the beginning. Well, not from the beginning, but since we saw its fortunes turn. The Wii U will be remembered like the Dreamcast. It will be remembered as a short-lived system with a smaller library of must-have games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's...
Oh, it hurts me so much that you're saying this right now. We'll get to it later. we'll get to it later. Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it lasted longer than the Dreamcast, but the Dreamcast probably had just as many titles at this point. But I have a library of about 30 Wii U games, and I love them all. And there's still a few more that I want to get. And that's saying more than I can say about a number of systems I've played. And the thing is, the Wii U's price is going to skyrocket. I totally think so, because I think the controller is too fragile.
Oh,
and there's no way to get a replacement without buying another system.
Well, if there's ever a clearance on these things, I am there to buy at least one.
Yeah, exactly. Because if my controller dies out, that's pretty much it for the system. And that's a big problem. Because with a lot of retro systems, your controller dies, you just get a new controller, or you fix it. Or you get the third-party knockoff controller. But there's no third-party knockoff controller for the Wii U.
Right.
So I mean... And a lot of the games you can't even access without using the touchpad. So even some of the games that don't require a controller still might require one to get to them. So I think the controllers are going to be worth a mint in the future, just because they're going to, you know, I think right now the Wii U library and the Wii U system itself is a joke to a lot of people. But I think much like the Dreamcast and some of the other systems, it's going to be rediscovered in about 10 years.
Okay. If even that long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Might be even shorter. I mean, like, there's so many games that just... Well, okay. Can I bring my Future Retro in right now? Or should I wait? I'll wait. But there's a game I'm playing right now that I'm like, this game sold like crap, but it's really fun. And I think there'll be an audience who's going to appreciate it in the future, and it's going to be really expensive because it sold like crap. You know, it's already happening with the Wii. It's already happening with the Wii. Games that were discounted to like $10 because no one was buying them. Or take the PlayStation Vita. The PlayStation Vita right now is selling for more than it sold new. Used right now. Not Vita, sorry. Vita TV or PlayStation TV. Whatever it was called in the States. I bought mine for like $20 on clearance.
Yeah,
haven't opened it yet, so maybe I should.
Well, yeah, you should probably sell it at this point.
No. It's going to keep going up in price because they stopped making it. But like people have realized now, oh wait, Vita has a really cool library. Hey, I'd love to play that on my TV. I wonder if they made something. Oh, they did. I just didn't buy it at the time. You know. So like anything's going to go up in value, unless it's a sports game.
Oh dear! Yeah, exactly.
Right now, Famicom Dojo has an entire box of Moero Pro Yaku, which is the Japanese version of Bases Loaded. Like a whole box of them, like just this like 50 of these red cartridges. And I'm like, and I was like, how much do you sell these for? Because a lot of Famicom Dojo stuff doesn't have prices on it. You just have to ask.
Right. Okay.
I was like, if someone asks you for one of these games, how much would you sell it for? And they're like, if someone is really interested in one of these games, they can have it. You know,
that's been my experience there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like, that's the type of game that when you buy another game, they're like, would you please take 5 copies of this baseball game with you as well? It's not a bad game either. It's just that, like, a lot of sports games, when they have sequels, you know, yearly installments, there's very, very little reason to ever go back to a previous one.
Right.
And so, like, the last in a series will usually be worth some money. Like, the last Family Stadium game. I mean, it'll be worth money because it's the most complete, and it's also the most rare, usually, because it comes out at the tail end of a system. So if for sports games, yeah, some sports games actually are a little bit expensive. And wacky sports games go up in value. Like Kunio-kun sports games are very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter what year they're in. They never really become obsolete.
Right, yeah, because they're just fun. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like NBA Jam.
Oh, man, NBA Jam's a great game. Oh, yeah, I have the Japanese version of it. It is exactly the same. There's no difference. Nothing was translated at all. They were like, if anybody really likes this game, they'll figure it out. So, you have any thoughts on video game value or something like that? You buy modern games, so you must be experiencing this.
Well, my problem is that, you know, I got a whole bunch of games that were on sale.
Okay. Right?
So Black Friday happened. I was actually in Best Buy the Thursday of Thanksgiving because we were on our way back home.
Wow.
And like my wife noticed that there was like a big like the parking lot at Best Buy was full because we drove right by it on the way home. It's like, oh crud, because I really wanted to get that $100 new 3DS
that
they were selling.
Yeah.
And I thought that, well, you know, I have until Friday morning. Nope. Apparently they open at 5, and I'm not sure if they meant 5 a.m. or p.m., but they opened at 5, and they were gone within minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got there. I ended up walking out with $40 of Blu-rays, like 6 or 7 of them. So I paid like less than $10 a set.
Oh, that's good.
A lot of them were superhero films, like, you know, the X-Men Rogue Cut version of Days of Future Past. I hadn't seen Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice or the other
I'm sorry to hear that
newer X-Men film. What was that one? Apocalypse?
I don't follow that enough.
But So I grabbed a bunch of discs, you know, and some for my kids too, because I'm not a horrible monster or anything like that. But
yeah.
But I had this weird like thing about value, just thinking about it going through the store there, because everything was slashed down so much. And it's like, you know, at these prices, I probably would buy more things. Like if they were just normally priced like this. So I was in the video game section already. Nintendo stuff wasn't really marked down, but I went through the PS4 aisle. And they had PS4 controllers knocked off at like $20 or $30. So I was gonna grab it. Then I was like, well, much as I'd like a non-black controller for my PS4, I don't really have a lot of two-player games, like maybe Injustice.
Yeah.
But like, when do I ever have anyone over who I can play against besides like my not quite 5-year-old, who it wouldn't be much of a contest. And, you know, and if I really wanted to do that, I could just pop in my Wii U copy.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. Don't really need a controller, so I put it back eventually. But I was walking around looking at games, and it's like, well, there's like a $20, I think it was $20, Rise of the Tomb Raider 20th Anniversary Edition. So maybe that's where the 20 came from. But it was far less than $60. Yeah. Bucks. And I'm like, well, I could get that because I haven't played that yet. But I thought, well, I haven't played the Xbox 360 version of the first Tomb Raider game, you know, the first Crystal Dynamics one. So I'm like, well, should I buy the second in this series when I really want to play the first one? I haven't done it yet. Then I walked by like a BioShock like collection that's the first two BioShock games plus BioShock Infinite, which is on my pile of shame. Also for 360, unopened, got that at a pretty good price. Like, do I care enough? Like, you know, there are all these games that I either own in some form or, you know, maybe there's like DLC and I can get it for this really, really cheap price. But like every single game I looked at, I'm like, I'm just not going to play this. Because I have so many other games that I bought that were cheap and I didn't play. It's like, why would I throw my money away like that? So I didn't buy any video games. Strange as it sounds.
You should have just bought some more Atari games.
Right. Well, if they only had some at Best Buy. So I ended up with that stack of Blu-rays because like my, you know, I was going to spend $100 on a 3DS I don't really need, just really, really wanted.
Yeah.
You know, like I barely play my 3DS as it is now. I would like to have the two just kind of commiserate back and forth on Street Pass so I can get my friggin' panel collection finished finally. But, you know, I don't
really... It's easier now.
I had things I could spend $100 on instead. So I spent less than half of that, or more than, less than half of that on movies that I or my family would like to watch instead. And that's where my value proposition lay. Like, one of those discs was like, I think, $2 or $3.
Yep.
Like it was ridiculously low priced. And it's like, you know, I would buy more things because the threshold for even buying one thing is so high, I just don't buy anything. Like there were times in the last couple of years around this time of year where I bought something that was pricey. Lego Dimensions.
Yeah.
It was marked down. Actually, it was like $40 for the starter pack, and I still couldn't get you to buy one.
Sorry.
I tried.
The shipping's going to kill me.
Right. And the sale is now over, unfortunately. I almost bought one anyway. Cuz who knows how that's going to be worth in the future. But it's, you know, specifically if it's like the Wii U version, who knows, right? I don't want to I probably should have bought the PS4 version cuz it had Supergirl and it's exclusive right now anyway. And I could have just pulled Supergirl out and just left the rest of it alone. I don't know. But like that was my big purchase in 2015 around this time last year. Like something I couldn't really justify or afford, but I wanted to buy for myself. And I've been enjoying it, which I'll get to when we get to the next segment. But the year before that, it was Mario Kart.
Yeah.
I want to say, was it Mario Kart and Smash Brothers? They were around the same time.
Fairly close. Fairly close.
So like the Smash Brothers thing was, you know, I got the one with the adapter and the GameCube controller, which was a good choice as it turned out, because those adapters sold out and never came back in stock.
Yep.
Like if I wanted an extra one, I just couldn't get it without paying out the nose for it.
Yep.
And I'm not confident that like the NES Classic is going to become in stock.
Yeah, that I'm worried about that as well, because Nintendo seems to be like, wow, that was really successful. What are we going to do next? Can we put more of those? No. We never look forward to the present. I mean, sorry, we never. Oh, never.
Yeah, that's us.
I messed it up. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. Remember when we were at Buffalo Wild Wings? What was that, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And they were hyping Titanfall 2 to here and back. You know, the table tents and the wrapper that our wings were in was Titanfall 2. That game was like $25 the other day.
Really?
Now, I know, yeah. I mean, that's Black Friday. Yeah, it's Black Friday. But,
okay.
But like, that's less than half of its value 3 weeks later.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That is not a sustainable market.
No.
You know? But like, I mean, if that's the price that they need to get it down, that people will buy it, maybe it shouldn't have started at $60, or, well, probably the real thing is they shouldn't have released it when it was in the middle of all kinds of other first-person shooters releasing at the same time. I mean, that's the real reason, but if they had their mind dead set on releasing it now, maybe they should have released it at a shorter price point, sold twice as many copies, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that would have kept the multiplayer going. Well, I don't know, like, and the thing is that's funny because, then what is the value of that game? You know what I mean? Mm. The whole question of value really comes down. Okay, here's a question for you and for our listeners. I really want to hear what they think on that. Does the value for you go up or down if you have bought something digitally? Now, I'm guessing that very few people are going to say the value goes up. But I bet a lot of people are going to make the argument that the value is the same.
Right.
But I mean, you know how I feel about this,
right?
That something has far more value to me if it's physical, because, like, in the future, yeah. Say you never get around to playing your BioShock Infinite.
Yeah.
Probably sometime in the future, a shrink wrapped copy of that is going to be worth some money.
Right.
You know. But, like, if you digitally downloaded it and you never played it, it's just your loss.
Right, because, you know, it's not portable. You can't share it with anybody, you know, unless it's, like, on Steam or something like that. And it's locked to your console, and if that console goes belly up, sorry. And if the service to re-download it's gone, you know, double out of luck. So, yep. I don't see a lot of value in digital stuff. Yep. Like, so, the only exception I'm going to say is, like, my PS4 could probably go for a pretty penny if I want to sell it because it has PT on it.
Yeah, but you'd have to give them your account as well, wouldn't you?
Oh, shoot. Yep, not
worth
it.
I don't know exactly how that works.
I think
I mean, if they ever wanted to do any other games on it, you know.
Right.
So, dang. I mean, that's the thing. It's really strange. That's why, for me, I will buy games digitally, but I will not pay full price for them. You know, I think my breaking point is about $10.
Okay.
I don't think I can pay more than that for something digital, because if it's that cheap, it's so much less of a risk. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, in that case, let's go to something that I thought was going to come up sooner, but Mario Run.
Oh. I'll buy it. Yeah.
Because this podcast will come out right around the time that game comes out.
But, like, what's nice is that it includes a demo. I like that. But, like, I don't know. I'm against digital, and I don't really want to encourage Nintendo to go all digital. Because, sure. But I appreciate Mario Run in that it doesn't have any DLC in it.
Sure.
Like, you buy it once, you have it forever. So I want to support Nintendo for doing that decision. But at the same time, I don't want to support... I don't know.
Do we know the price on that yet? Like, I don't...
$10. It is
$10. Okay, so it's right at your threshold.
It is right at my threshold. And frankly, it seems a little... I think $5 would have been my...
Oh, God.
Do it without even thinking.
$10 for a brand new Mario game. When has that ever happened? Let's talk about value right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that. But the thing is, if it was a new Mario game for $10 on the Wii U or the Switch,
No question whatsoever. But it's a one button runner game. You know what I mean? It's not an endless runner. It's not, you know, it's not Temple Run or something like that. It has actual levels to it, but at the same time, it's not what one would call a full-fledged Mario game. So, I don't know. Luckily, there's a demo that's going to come out that has a number of levels that people can try it, see what they think about it.
Sure, sure.
And you know what? I might even do that. Like, I know a lot of people have been... I guess you can pre-order. Like, it'll just automatically download when it comes out. But
yeah, that's what I did.
Even though it's Nintendo and even though it's Mario, I think I'll play the demo first.
God, you can't buy a Mario game for $10 sight unseen.
Well,
Mario, we're not talking like, you know, Ratchet and Clank or some nonsense.
Not gonna fall into that again. Not gonna fall into that again. I have Mario is Missing. Okay, and I have a friend who bought Hotel Mario, so. Don't get me started on Mario games.
Hotel
Mario's
not too bad, actually. I don't know.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad, but you know, it is not too bad. But anyway, no, $10. But $10 for a mobile game is like saying I would like $80 for this banana. You know what I mean? Because the bottom dropped out of mobile games, totally. I mean, like, we've gotten to a point where 99 cents is too much for mobile games, and they have to be free or no one downloads them. With DLC, of course.
Right.
But man, I'll tell you that, Nintendo, if you're listening, I would rebuy Pokemon Go and pay money for it. I would pay $30 for it. I'd pay $30 for a version of Pokemon Go that had no DLC and that actually allowed me to battle and trade.
Ooh.
$30. You got it. Because I like the concept of Pokemon Go. It's getting me some exercise, but I'm getting bored. Bored, bored, bored. Because there's only so many Pidgeys you can collect. There's only so many Pidgeys you can collect. And, like, I mean, there's rare Pokemon that I don't have, but I have no strong desire to collect them because I cannot – there are no achievements. Well, there's no shareable achievements. There's no battle system. There's no trade system. So other than, ooh, I got a rare Pokemon, let me go and take a screenshot of it and post it to Twitter. That's about all I got, you know? Right. And there's no goal in the game, no story, no characters, nothing. So – but I like playing Pokemon Go, but if you released it as a full-fledged product, I would pay real money for that.
As it stands, I have not spent a single dollar on it.
As it stands, I have not spent any money on Pokemon Go, and that puts me up there with apparently the designers of the game who seem to spend no time with it, so...
Oh, boo!
I know. They've added a ton of stuff lately, actually.
Like,
they have, yes.
You actually can see what your moves do, how much power they have, and like what types they are. You can see what types of Pokemon are now. What else? They've added some fun background animations for the screen. So that's
There's some nice bonuses.
There's like a streak you get. So you get more points if you collect.
Yep. That just started. But come on, trading. I mean, trading, battling. I want to fight other people's Pokemons.
Right.
That was the main thing of the first game, you know.
Right.
The song's not. I mean, maybe it is. Gotta catch them all and then not do anything with them.
Wow.
That's how it went, right? That's how it went. Pokemon, go home, you're drunk. Hashtag. Okay. Yes, we were born to play on this retry game. Let's act on you.
Do you like movies? Well, you better, because we're going to talk about your favorite one for 10 minutes.
This isn't a movie. This is a f***ing documentary. This was my high school experience, except I did not get my period. But I'm still hopeful. And if it happens in the next 9 minutes and 52 seconds, I'll tell you.
This is 10 minutes about your favorite movie.
Listen to 10 minutes about your favorite movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network. All right, so shall we move on then?
Let's move on. Let's move on. Do you want to go first?
Okay. In Future Retro, we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we played for the first time. Or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing. And we try to convince each other if we should.
Or not. Well, keeping in the spirit of talking about value and the Wii U and everything, I have a pile of shame for you.
Tell me about it.
It's the Wii U.
Shame.
What? What?
This shouldn't be a surprise. Like I've complained on previous shows that, you know, I haven't played a lot of the games I download. Like I download a lot of eShop games.
Okay.
Those are the ones I had for a long time before I bought disc games. Right. But, I've been having a problem lately, especially, you know, with the fact that the Wii U is going to be over soon. Like the production has stopped in Japan. Well, everywhere, I guess, but production has stopped. And they're gearing up for the Switch. And I don't know what's happening to the Wii U in the near future, but
nothing.
I was looking at, well, you know, I mean, like what's going to happen with the remaining stock? Because like I said, there weren't a lot of Black Friday sales and that would have been the time to do it, you know?
Not really, because they have no product at all until the Switch comes out. They have nothing because they're also sold out on the mini systems. Right. So if by heavily discounting the Wii U, all they do is they clear their channel completely, so they have nothing to sell in the time being. It's better to keep the price as what it is because they'll eventually clear the stock. People who want to collect that system will eventually get rid of. There's no real benefit to Nintendo to go $99 for a Wii U right now because no one's ever going to buy enough software, you know, to make it worth it. Nintendo's to take a $200 cut on it.
Sure.
No, it makes total sense. If they were still, you know, like, you know, everyone talks about how the GameCube sold way more, but so many of those were sold at a loss at $99 that, you know, that's not necessary, and it still never got anywhere near the other system, you know.
Well,
I think,
I'm looking at my collection here.
Yeah.
And what do I have? I have Game & Wario, Splatoon, Super Mario 3D World, Zombie U, Mass Effect 3 Special Edition, New Super Luigi U, Mario Kart 8, Pikmin 3, Injustice, Super Mario Maker, Super Smash Brothers for Wii U, Nintendo Land, Twilight Princess HD, and Lego Dimensions is currently in my Wii U as we speak. There's one thing all these games have in common.
Oh, God. Don't tell me. Okay, go ahead.
I haven't finished a single one of them.
That's sad.
I've played a bunch of these like in like big spurts when I first got them. But if you want to talk about value propositions, I think I got Game & Wario and Super Luigi U more or less for cheap as free because this was like at a time in the first year or two after the Wii U came out and they were deeply discounting games at places like Target and whatnot. And you needed a collection. So like, you know, every so many games you got one free or whatever. So, you know, we kind of split the difference on that and I got some really cheap games that way. So like a Game & Wario and New Super Luigi U fall into that category. But I never bought other games like Rayman, right? Even though that was supposed to be an exclusive at the time.
You never got Lego City, which is fantastic.
I never got Bayonetta, and there's apparently a version of Bayonetta 2 that doesn't come with the original Bayonetta.
Yeah.
And so now that is really expensive.
Yep, really expensive.
So, like, I missed the boat there. And it's like, but, you know, the reason I didn't buy a lot of Wii U games is because I knew in the back of my mind I'm really not going to play them. And I don't know if it's for lack of wanting to play games, but it's just like in general, the last few years, I just don't play a lot of games. Like I've mentioned before on the show that I want to go back to Pikmin 3, and I think we discussed the strategy for defeating whatever
so
boss I hadn't
good.
Beaten yet. So I think that's the one I'm going to go back to.
Yeah.
And try that first. But I'm just looking at this stack of stuff, and it's like, you know, Super Mario Maker was great about a year ago when everyone was into it. But now I'm just like, well, they keep patching things, and the parts I was interested in, you can't really do. And, you know, I'm not crazy enough to be popular in this sphere.
Well, if rumor serves correctly, you know, there's going to be a new version of it for the Switch, and there's already a version right on its way for the 3DS as well. So
right there, yeah, we knew that was coming.
So like, it's a franchise now. So I
get to buy it again, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'll buy it the second time because I very much enjoyed it. I liked letting my daughters create levels, and I had a very fun time with it. But I don't think I need another one. I mean, I'm good. Unless, well, who knows? Who knows what Nintendo's going to pull out to bring me back in? It's very possible. But Splatoon, I will rebuy.
Yeah.
If Splatoon is on the Switch, because my kids like that one so much, and I like that one so much, and it's given me so many. I mean, I've put hundreds of hours into Splatoon, so that one is a no-brainer. But well, you're missing a lot of really, really classics. I can't believe you don't have Bayonetta too. You should definitely get Xenoblade.
Okay. Well, I mean, if that's coming out for Switch, I might as well wait, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I'd say that if it's not announced during the January Direct, that maybe the rumor was wrong, and then you might want to run and grab a Wii U copy.
Sure.
But if it gets announced there, yeah, I might as well wait.
I think the order I'm going to go in, because I really do want to play these. I think I need to finish Pikmin 3. I need to actually play like any substantial portion of Super Mario 3D World. And then probably
that, you should play Super Mario 3D World with your wife. That's a good way to play it.
Okay.
Because it's more fun multiplayer, and if your wife's joining you as well, maybe one of your kids can grab a controller as well. Because they're gonna die very frequently, but you know you can pull them through the stage, kind of.
Sure.
You can actually pick them up and walk them.
Nice.
through the hard jumps.
Is that four player? Or is four player, right?
Four player. Yeah.
Oh, then you know, like two of my kids can probably play then.
Exactly. So, I let my kids play, and they died constantly, but they were having fun with it. So,
because just today, you know, we were playing Lego Dimensions again.
Yeah.
And it's a fun game. I like it. It's just you know, the little ones, they tear apart the actual physical part of the game.
Yep. And that's another thing that's holding me back from picking it up.
Right. Because
little dude just started crawling. So.
All right.
Nothing is safe again. So time to start locking the game room. Yep.
Yeah, my littlest dude is also very handsy on this stuff. So I just let him hold the 3DS and he just likes to open and shut it. Then I actually turned it on for him and he like hold it up to his eyes for some reason. I don't understand. It's adorable.
I saw him gnawing on one of your Transformers.
Yeah, that happens. so I want to play these games, and this does remind me that when I got Twilight Princess HD, I was actually streaming it on Twitch. But we don't have a Twitch audience. There was like maybe two or three people total who were watching. And I was talking to Game Dave about this because he streams also. And he suggested, well, why don't you go where your audience is? Go to YouTube and just stream on there. And so I have, you know, Twitch has this thing where like if you don't save a clip, quote unquote, of your previous broadcast, they just disappear forever. And so I have locally stored copies of everything that we've done. So far, so I can put those up again. But my problem is I don't have a really good like visual overlay setup thing, so it's not very interesting to look at besides the game footage part of it. And apparently, like my microphone didn't work right, so it was like actually my laptop's on screen or on hardware built-in mic. so it didn't sound that great when I was trying to like hook in and stuff. So I got to get that figured out too. But like, listeners, if you're interested in seeing me stream some of my pile of shame, I would be happy to try and find some time every week or so to do that. It'll help me get through it. And if you can suggest going to Twitch and trying to build a new audience there, or just streaming it to our YouTube channel, maybe you should go on That's Orange instead of
yeah, maybe Famicom just because Dojo. Because otherwise we're gonna get a lot of complaints about these aren't new videos, these aren't real episodes,
right? So I can do that. It's nice to have a channel with a few thousand subscribers you can just throw it onto and they'll enjoy it. So I can put up the backlog, you know, the old stuff. So the first thing I did with Twilight Princess was I think I compared it to the Wii version right away. Mm-hmm. Just like a quick little like 10-minute comparison, and then actually started playing the game. Mm-hmm. But you know, the thing I like about that version was that you know, it's based off the GameCube port, so the world is not inverted like it is in the Wii version. But also, speaking of value, that GameCube version never went down in price.
Never, like, ever.
Ever. So I'm glad that this came out, because I was able to buy it and then got the Amiibo, so whatever that's worth. But.
Yeah, I will say that one of the biggest, if you ever wanted to have a game just for how much it's going to be worth in the future, don't cancel your pre-orders for the Wii U version of Breath of the Wild.
No. Oh.
Because I'm guessing it'll be produced in limited quantities. And apparently, rumor has it that it's coming out a week after the Switch version.
Okay. And I heard both of those are coming out in June now instead of March.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. Well, they were never slated for March. They were always just 2017.
I mean, fair enough. But like, you know, one of the reasons that we had a strong lineup was because it had a Zelda game at launch. Nintendo's doing the exact same thing they did with the Wii U, which is to have ports of things we already have. This time, first party Nintendo games.
Well, I don't know. I think it's more like when the Wii launched, when it launched with a Zelda game that was a port of a GameCube game. And that worked out very well.
Yeah, but it came out the same day. The same day, so you didn't have time.
Well, yeah. But apparently we're getting, if the same source that's saying that game is coming out in July is also saying that the system's going to launch with a Mario. A 3D Mario.
For whatever. So... all the more reason to get 3D World finished, apparently.
So it got a lot of crap because it wasn't a galaxy, but I really enjoyed that game. I really enjoyed
it. At the time it was announced and I saw it, and the reason I bought it, because I never bought a new Super Mario Brothers game beyond the DS version. Yeah. Hence why I have new Super Luigi U, because not really my thing. Like, it had everything I wanted in a Mario game, and then I've rewarded that with not playing it. So I need to fix that. Okay, that's it for my massive pile of shame. What do you got for me?
I'm going to do a future retro, because unlike some people I know, I've been playing my Wii U recently.
Oh, no. Okay.
And the game that I've been playing...
Like I said, I've been playing Lego Dimensions.
Yeah, I know.
Unlike some people I know.
I see what you did there. Okay. I've been playing Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
All right.
Sharp Effie. It is the much maligned, when it was announced, it blew people's minds, because they basically announced that Shin Megami Tensei was going to have a cross game with Fire Emblem. So those are two very hardcore RPG series that have very, very dedicated fan bases. And people were losing their mind at this announcement. What it actually turned into is quite different. It's more like a little bit of Fire Emblem mixed with Persona, mixed with like AKB48. Like
what?
It became like people thought it was going to be like kind of a dark, realistic, because you know Shin Megami Tensei is, you know, fighting demons and things like that, and Fire Emblem is known for its strong stories and things like that. And it became more of like in modern times set game, where you're in the world of like Tokyo otaku culture, like idol singers and things like that. And it has cameos by the Fire Emblem characters, but it's more like a Persona game in like visuals and basic world than it is like a Shin Megami Tensei game. So
So a lot of people were very disappointed, and a lot of people discounted it completely and just went, I don't want that crap. And a lot of people ignored it, which is unfortunate because beyond that it's disappointing for what it isn't, it's really great for what it is. And it has a very solid battle system. Really, really nice upgradability things, items, things like that. I'm not super deep into the story, so I'm enjoying it right now, but I don't know how serious it's going to get or how strong it's going to be. I'll have to reserve my impressions for that because I'm only a few hours in. It makes really nice use of the Wii Pad in that if you get text messages and stuff, it basically is like your Wii Pad is your smartphone. And you'll have characters who are like texting you like during things, which kind of like it just helps the world building a little bit more. Mm. And the visuals are solid. The soundtrack is great, really good music. But I suppose if you are put off by J-pop in general, you might. I don't know. I think there's still enough there that you could enjoy this game even if you weren't. But if you happen to like J-pop, it's a great game. It's really good. The soundtrack is licensed by Avex, who represents artists like Ayumi Hamasaki and things like that. It's just I don't know. Maybe for me it's because, you know, I've been to a lot of the locations that are seen in this game. You know, they change the names and stuff. But, you know, where it's based off of. And, you know, I live here and I see the idol culture and things like that. So maybe I'm from a slightly different perspective. But I really have found a lot to like in this game. The biggest problem is I can't play it off screen. So going is very slow because I have to play it when I can have the TV all to myself. I was playing it. My girls really like the singing and dancing parts, but there's monsters and demons in which they find a little scary. So I can no longer play it in the living room during times when kids are awake. So, but still, I think I'm really enjoying it. And as I said, if you're looking for a game that's going to be very expensive in the future, I really think that one's going to be it. In Japan, it only sold about 25,000-30,000 copies. In America, probably that much or maybe less. And, you know, but it's an RPG, which almost always, even bad RPGs, go up in value as time goes on because people want to play those type of games because they're not so dependent on the cutting-edge graphics usually. I think that one's going to be worth a lot in the future. I could be wrong on it, but I don't really see any reason not to. It's not selling very well right now, but it's a very unique title, and it has connections to, you know, Atlus games and Fire Emblem, which are classics. So even if people don't really care for the game, people who are trying to collect the whole set of either of those are going to need this one. So if I could make a recommendation for collectors, it would be this one and the Wii U version of Breath of the Wild.
Really, man? Should I?
I don't know. I'm planning to buy them both.
Like, it does sound like at this point it would be an investment.
Yeah, yeah, it would. But like, if Breath of the Wild, like some of the stuff that they were talking about with using the gamepad with the game, some of it might not be able to be replicated if you play it on a console, you know, on Switch as a console.
Right, right.
You know, the whole dual screen aspect of it. So there might be enough different that it might be worth having both versions anyway.
Jeez, but do I even bother to open it, or do I buy?
Yeah,
three
that's
copies?
The question. Yeah, do you buy? Exactly, oh, exactly. God. That's always the
maybe
thing.
Maybe I'll buy a new copy and like troll the used game store, see if I can get a used one for a pretty good price.
There are a few games in my collection right now that I have shrink wrapped, sealed, still, which I've then gone and bought the digital version of to play.
God, is there like even any point in, because by if it's June we're talking about and the Wii U production has stopped, like aren't we going to be close to seeing the Wii U liquidation at that point? And what's the point of even releasing a new game at that?
Well,
juncture?
I think it's mainly because there's you know 10 million, 11 million something people who bought a Wii U.
Okay.
And it's not everyone is in a not. No, I maybe it's more, but regardless, not all of them are in a financial position to be able to afford the Switch immediately.
Right.
But most people can afford to get a new game.
Right.
You know, or you know, at that time maybe used Wii U's are going to be available for, you know, $140. So then, you know, you pay $200 and you can play the new Zelda game, and then you can sell back the system to buy a Switch later. You know, I think it's just as practical as making the GameCube version of Zelda. In that you're not gonna make tons of sales from it, but it makes more sense to do it than to not do it.
And since no one owns a Wii U like a GameCube, then the disc price won't ever go down, apparently.
Yeah.
Potentially. But yeah, that'll be interesting to see if there's any difference between like a disc and a cartridge version. That's going to be a comparison. Well, I mean, let's just do it.
Phil and I
I haven't talked to him about it. Oh no, I did. I think I asked him if we wanted to do another Nintendo launch video together. Yeah. And since it involves a Switch, then if we both get a Switch and can like showcase some of the multiplayer functionality right away, that'd be cool. On the other hand, that means that, you know, since I don't live near him anymore, we had to find some way to get mine. Either I'll have to pre-order it from the same store and just like go down there on launch day, or wait, isn't March 17th like St. Patrick's Day or something
like that? I mean, still Nintendo hasn't made an official announcement yet, but
yeah, it's a Friday. Well, yeah, I can make a plan to pre-order it from the same place, and then we can just
I mean, pre-orders aren't even up yet,
right
I mean, but the thing is, like, I think it's going to be more like the Wii than it's going to be like the Wii U for launch, though. There's hype surrounding this thing right now, and people get the concept, which is unlike the Wii U. So I'm not entirely sure if I'm going to be able to get one on launch.
Okay.
Please be region-free. Please be region-free. Seriously, don't want to buy... I mean, I might buy two of these, but I'd like the two that I buy to be compatible with each other.
Yeah.
Because my kids are going to get old enough that they're going to want their own probably within the lifetime of this system. So I'll probably eventually get two. But if I have to buy two different ones to do games from different regions, that's ridiculous.
Right.
That means I won't be getting it. Okay, Nintendo, I know you listen to this podcast. So listen up. If you don't release this region-free, or if you put some stupid region lock on it, I will not be buying your system at launch. I will buy it next time I'm in the States.
Hmm.
It's going to be down the road. And you know what? You're missing out on a whole bunch of software that I'd buy in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
That I wasn't even planning to read reviews of. I was just going to buy it, sight unseen. You could have released any crap you... Wait, hold on. Nintendo, stop listening. All right, that's all I got to say about that.
All right. To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Inchimail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more. So yeah, I guess in summation, I mean, value is still in the eye of the beholder. It doesn't make a lot of sense to us. We're worried for our hobby. We don't think that the NES Classic is going to come back in stock ever.
I remain cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, we'll see. Should have pre-ordered it or something.
Should have pre-ordered it.
Good grief.
Yep.
But in any case, oh yes, and please tell us if you would prefer us to go to Twitch or on YouTube. I guess YouTube's getting better about alerting people when people are live streaming.
Yeah. So yeah, apparently they send notifications if you're a subscriber now.
So. Yeah. So that should be helpful. So I'm leaning towards streaming these from the Sean Orange channel for all those who are listening. So unless anyone can convince me to go to Twitch, I suppose. But yeah, if you are interested in that kind of thing and want to see us stream, let us know, and we will make sure that you know when we are doing it and what games we're going to be planning on playing.
Cool.
So, all right. Then I guess until next time, the dojo is?
Basic reading ability is needed to fully enjoy this podcast.
Oh, God.
Sorry. I'm reading the back of one of my cases. And it says, basic reading ability is needed to fully enjoy this game. Is this on a lot of things? I've never really noticed that before.
I have no idea.
No. It's on the back of a couple different things. It's on the back of Pikmin 3.
Oh.
Wow, there's no reading involved in our podcast at all. So.
Unless you go to any of the links I recommend. Unless you play that Famicom Love Life, which does require basic reading.
Sean, this is a week later we're talking about right now.
Yeah, well, hopefully everyone's played it.
Everyone's played it by now. Everyone's okay. Played it, and they're waiting for their sequel, and
they use their basic reading ability to tell us how much they love it.
And knowing the maker of the game, there's probably a sequel by now.
Oh God.
Oh dear.
I really do love that game, though. I laughed so hard playing that.
Game of the year 2016 for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not even hyperbole.
I know.
Nintendo, port this game to the Switch.
Oh.
I mean, don't port this game to the Switch, ever.
Yeah, stop.
You'd never do that.
It needs music. It needs some music. We need to find someone who's good at chiptunes. Right. Who can make like a chiptune version of like the Famicom Dojo theme, but like set it at like a sweeter pace.
Hey, do you think DJ Cutman's busy?
I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to do this project.
Oh, for sure.
But anyway, great. I'll see you next podcast.
Yeah.
We're gonna keep these going through Christmas? We're gonna take a break from that or just keep them going?
Oh, we'll see what happens. I got some vacation time coming up, so I can probably pop one out here or there.
Me too. I wonder if anyone will listen to them though.
We also have to listen to our predictions podcast and find out what we got wrong.
Everything.
We'll have to actually make the bingo card that we never ended up making.
We might have some unfulfilled stake bets somewhere.
Oh, you're right. Dang.
Yeah. I mean, because I think we made more stake bets than the ones we actually. But I don't know. Maybe one stake can count for multiple bets. I don't know. We gotta figure out a better system for this.
Indeed. I think just buying each other a stake works pretty well, though.
That worked pretty good. That was
pretty good stake. All right, we have to end the podcast again, I think, so let's try it again.
Yes.
All right, okay. So until next time, the dojo is...
improved with a new fresh scent.
What terrible games you have.
I don't know, I already had one this week.
Oh, man.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.